you order. With us today is Representative Moses, Representative Holm, Representative Kelly, Co-Chairman Schnault, myself, Co-Chairman Meyer, and we have Representative Warwick over there with his friends. On this morning's schedule, we have House Bill 381, Tobacco Revenue for the University and Correctional Facilities, Senate Bill 171, NPRA Community Grant Program, Senate Bill 315, Deposition of some kind of property.
Must be 315.
Yes, Senate Bill 315. Okay, let's take up Senate Bill 380 or House Bill 381 first. And Mr. Eklund, if you'll come to the table, please. Unredeemed. Okay. Yeah. What do we need to
make a motion to adopt the CS?
Okay. Chair, I'll entertain a motion for a.
Mr. Chairman, I make the motion that we adopt CS for House Bill 381 Finance 24-GH2071-I as a working document.
Any objections for that version be in front of us? Seeing none, we have the CS before us. Mr. Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Peter Eklund, staff to yourself, Co-Chair Meyer. House Bill 381, the CS you have in front of you, authorizes the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation through the Northern Tobacco Securitization Corporation to acquire the rights to receive 80% of the proceeds from the master settlement agreement and to sell bonds. The legislation was crafted to give the NTSC flexibility in order to maximize the dollar amount that can be captured for the state while minimizing cost. Depending on market acceptance and conditions, NTSC could refund the two current outstanding tobacco bond issuances, sell the revenue stream that is expected after the retirement of the current outstanding bonds, or both. Legislation is expected to generate just under $140 million in bond proceeds that will be used for university and other capital projects across the state. That's it, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Any questions for Mr. Eklund? If no questions for Mr. Eklund, I'd like to go on to who do we have for last cast and Brian? Okay, Brian, if you could come up, please.
Butcher. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Brian Butcher, Governmental Relations and Public Affairs Director for the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. Connected telephonically should be our Chief Financial Officer, Joe Dubler, as well as our CEO, Dan Fowski.
Okay. Yeah, if you have him on the list as being online. Just a few questions. I'll start it out. What period of time are we talking about on these bonds? This is a 20-year, 30-year, 40-year bond?
I believe I'll let Mr. Dubler answer that.
Okay. Joe?
Mr. Chairman, this is Joe Dubler. I'm the Chief Financial Officer and Finance Director for the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. The restructured bonds are anticipated to be sold in 2006, will mature an expected maturity in 2039 with a final maturity of 2048. And I don't know if anybody recalls from the first transaction, there's what's called a turbo feature on these bonds, and that's where they set the required debt service to a rather low level, and then all the surpluses that are received over and above the amount required to make that lower debt service are used to redeem bonds at an accelerated rate. So that's why you've got an expected maturity of 39 and final legal of 2048.
Okay. Very good. And what's the range of interest rates do you expect on this?
The range of interest rates on this transaction, if they were sold today, and the problem, and I'm sure you can relate, is that the capital markets move quickly. The coupon will range from about 4.75 to a 5 1/8 on the 2001 refunding. And with a yield that we sold at a discount, so the yield would be 490 to 540, and the 2001 would have similar interest rates.
Okay, very good. And if we stretch out maturity date, what what impact does that have?
Well, the further out you go, obviously the riskier it gets for the investor, and the higher the interest rate. So some of the yields that we're looking at on the longer term ones, which we're not going to recommend that we do, go up to 8%. And the bankers that prepared this analysis showed these yields in the 540, 650, 710, and 8%. The further out you go, the longer ones are non-rated bonds, and that's because they're relatively risky compared to the others, and that's why they demand a higher rate.
Okay, so the further out you go, the more money we could get, but the more it would cost us.
Right, and there is a diminishing return where you're getting very little production for an awful lot of future dollars.
Okay, very good. So you're comfortable with the 2048 expiration at $140 million?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, we are.
And what will that cost us as far as insurance? I guess you don't know the interest rate just yet. But what costs would be associated with that?
Currently, Mr. Chairman, the anticipated revenues that would be utilized to make debt service on these bonds would be about $355 million. And that includes, obviously, principal and interest. Of future value dollars, I should make that clear.
Okay. All right, any other questions for either Mr. Butcher, Mr. Dubler? Okay, don't see any questions at this time. Any questions on the bill itself? Has everyone's had an opportunity to look at it?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
You're just happy?
Oh, no, I was just thinking of it. We just had the CS put in front of our desk, and so I was just smiling at your question.
But I think the projects themselves, well, you've had some
right.
time.
It's pretty much the same as the addition is the projects that are in.
Yeah, and again, the bulk of this is the capital projects for the university. That's $90 million of the $140 million. And the rest of the projects is just kind of a scattering throughout the state. Okay. If there's no questions or comments, I think this bill is headed to the floor. Representative Chenault?
Mr. Chairman, I make a motion that we move House Bill 381. Out of committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Any objections? Seeing none, bill passes committee.
Mr. Chairman?
Thank you, Brian. Okay, we'll take a brief at ease while the next bill, the presenter has a little presentation, so we'll give him a minute or two. We do have the sponsor here with us today, Senator Wilken. So, Senator Wilken, welcome to House Finance, and the floor is yours.
But Chair Meyer and the members of the committee, thanks for taking the time. I know this is a busy time for everyone, but I'd like to steal about 20 minutes of yours this morning to work on something that I think, and I hope you will think, is important and important enough to pass out of committee and place in law. Senate Bill 171, and I'm going to read into the record a sponsor statement that capitalizes the effort. But before you should have the bill, of course, itself. You should have a sponsor statement. You should have a sectional analysis. Fiscal notes. You should have a copy of a memorandum from Jack Chenoweth expressing a couple of concerns that may or may not be concerns. You should have a book like this that comes from the administration on the 15th of every January. And I think that's all. You may have some other stuff, but that's certainly the guts of this. If I could, Mr. Chairman, if I could read into the record the sponsor statement, and then I have about a 14-slide presentation, if I could. Senate Bill 171 centers on the National Petroleum Reserve, Alaska, a well-known federal reserve rich in gas and oil. The state of Alaska is poised to receive a significant amount of money from lease sales, exploration, and production of gas and oil in this area. This money is the focus of Senate Bill 171. The bounty of NPRA is thought by many to match or exceed the oil and gas deposits found at Prudhoe Bay or Kuparuk. As was mentioned in the Anchorage Daily News, February 5, BLM estimates the NPRA northeast corner could hold more than 2 billion barrels of crude oil and 3.5 trillion cubic feet of gas. All Alaskans look forward to the time when they can enjoy the benefits of reasonable and responsible development of these natural resources. When members of the United States Congress authorized competitive leases in NPRA in 1980, they recognized that development in the petroleum reserve might severely impact communities in or near the area. The federal legislation directed that revenue generated through NPRA development be used first to mitigate direct impacts, if any, to municipalities, and then by the rest of the state of Alaska. This federal dictate is in direct conflict with Alaska's state constitution. The state of Alaska receives from the federal government 50% of royalties and lease payments from oil and gas development, NPRA. As required by federal law, these funds are available before consideration of any other public purpose to communities that demonstrate impact from resource development in NPRA. Unfortunately, this directive is at odds with Article 9, Section 15 of our Constitution, which clearly states, quote, at least 25% of all mineral lease rentals, royalties, royalty sale proceeds, federal mineral revenue sharing payments, and bonuses received by the states shall be placed in a permanent fund, end quote. Since 1983, the state of Alaska has received $167.6 million from development of the NPRA, $122 million just since the year 2000. But as noted in the following chart, only 6% of the NPR receipts have been deposited into the Alaska Permanent Fund since the turn of the century. We'll come back to this chart in the slide presentation. House CS for CS Senate Bill 171 recognizes this unsettling conflict and puts in place a mechanism to help ensure that the Alaska Permanent Fund receives to the extent allowed under federal law 25% of all oil and gas lease rentals and royalties as directed by our Constitution. In addition, the House Community and Regional Affairs Committee substitute requires that the appropriations made as NPRA-funded grants be identified and the amounts of each grant be specified in an appropriation bill as other capital appropriations. While it's important to address this conflict between our state constitution and federal law, there remains an equally troublesome issue that must be remedied: how the federal NPRA payments are distributed to Alaska communities that may be severely impacted by oil and gas development within the National Petroleum Reserve. But in the spirit of compromise, this issue is set aside for another day. I respectfully submit and request your support of this legislation. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'd like to just turn to this slide presentation, if I could. And this is going to be about half history lesson and half where this legislation tries to take us. All of us in January received, every Alaskan received a newsletter or a well, a newsletter from the Permanent Fund. 600,000 were mailed, and we all got this, and we all remember it. And you can't read that from where you sit, but down in the right corner, you can see that that's section 15, article section 9, article 15 of our Constitution. And I somewhat tongue-in-cheek put in here where it says all rents and royalties. We really should put in here except NPRA, because NPRA is different. It comes before our permanent fund. And so, somewhat tongue-in-cheek, I say, but the fact of the matter is there's a count in front of our permanent fund, something called an impact fund. And it was inserted there in 1980 by federal legislation. And as I said, we're required by, when we took the oath of office, to uphold our Constitution, and that clearly states that 25% goes into the permanent fund. But as I said earlier, out of the monies received, $167 million, only 15% since 1983 have been deposited to the permanent fund. So where'd the money go? On the left, you see the blue slide. That is 1983 to 2006. You can see that we've received $167.6 million, and the pie has been divvied up. $100 million, 59%, has gone to impacted communities, four communities on the North Slope, totaling 5,500 people. You can see that 12% of that has dropped to the general fund, 13%, $21 million, has gone to PCE, and the permanent fund at $25 million, 15%. That should be troubling, but what's even more troubling is to look at this decade. You can see 2000 to 2006 that we've received $112 million. Of that, the grants have gone, $83.6 million have gone to four communities and a borough on the North Slope. You can see that $21 million have gone to PCE, and a scant 6%, $7 million, have touched our permanent fund, clearly in violation of our constitutional oath. Some would think that the NPRA is the salvation of the general fund. I submit to you that you can see that in this 6 years of this decade, not a dollar has touched the general fund from NPRA. This legislation will redirect and put in priority, subject to federal law, that 25% of the monies received as our 50% from NPRA goes to the permanent fund. It's helpful to look at the history. You can see here the blue chart. The blue columns are the monies received mostly from lease sales and NPRA. There was a little activity back in the early 80s, and then it laid dormant until the year 2000, which is the first time it came on the screen. At that time, there was a deal made that we would insert PCE into the legislation in the hope that the North Slope and the four communities would pull back on their requests so that we could fund the PCE component that is usually taken from the general fund. That deal hasn't been followed through. So you can see that in 04 and 06, there's been significant monies, and indeed the checkered column is the expectation of lease sales that will be held in October of this year, somewhere around $50 million. This is only, I would tell you, this is only leases. This has nothing to do with production. So as time goes on, this will not be measured in tens of millions. Within a decade, this will be measured in hundreds of millions of dollars. I had a slide in here in the longer presentation. You can see that at the very bottom, last year we awarded, there's been $104 million awarded to four communities. Last year it was $24 million. If you do that on a per capita basis, a single grant for a single fiscal year to a single area, if you did that on a per capita basis, that would be a grant to the city of Anchorage of $1.2 billion, be a grant to my community of $400 million. This isn't chump change that we're talking about here. This is a significant amount of money per capita. What is NPRA? It's helpful to remember, there's a wonderful map downstairs in the CRA room, just how big this area is. You can see Alpine right in the middle. We'll talk about that in just a moment. This is about 200 miles, a little over 200 miles from here to there. You can see it's about the size of Vanmore and is much larger than our current production area of the Central North Slope. Here's the activity in the NPRA today. We're right on this edge. We're right on this edge right here where Alpine is. And you can see there's sites here. Nowitzit is 8 miles away from development. Akasuk is in the Central NPRA, 160 miles. Wainwright on the western corner, 220 miles, and Barrow, 160 miles.
This is important just to get us a reference of the frame, of the geographical reference, when you start to talk about impacts of development in NPRA.
Here's the communities we talk about. You can see Barrow is about 4,300 people, median income of about 67,000. Wainwright, 531, medium income, 54,000.
Hokasook, population 218, income 66,000. Newitz at 430 people, about 48,000. That just gives you a sense of distances and sense of
the word impact that we'll talk about in a moment.
Little history of Warren Harding establishing NPRA as a naval reserve
back in 1923, and in 1980 Congress then authorized it for lease sales, and the legislation that we speak of today was put in place, and it said that we would get 50% of the revenue out of NPRA, federal government getting the other 50%. And the federal law, of course, said that the first cut at the money goes to impacted communities. And so without a state law in the books, the legislature back in the early 80s put the money into the general fund and into the state trust fund, school trust fund, and then into the permanent fund. But a lawsuit followed by the North Slope Borough. And in 1985, Judge Carpinetti ruled. You can see there that his ruling, which in 1986, which was not appealed, said that the automatic deposits into the permanent fund violate the federal law. State of Alaska has a mandatory duty to address NPRA development-related impact needs under federal law, and the duty imposed by the federal government ultimately falls on the legislature. And I just want to take a moment here. In his decision, unappealed, I'd like to just read the record. Judge Carpinetti said, this is law today, the duty imposed by the federal government ultimately falls upon the Alaska legislature, and it includes the duties to examine the claim needs of the subdivisions arising from oil and gas development impacts, to evaluate them, and if claim needs are found to exist, to rate them in order of priority and meet them out of NPRA revenues. That's current law. I added the emphasis with the underline. That's the basis upon which this effort is built, is that decision. And we have three levels of law to...
I think your foot unplugged your...
We have three levels of law today. That's right. The rest of this will... that we work under. We have work under federal law. Federal law then it has a subset, Alaska law, and then regulations. And each of those talk about impacts due to oil and gas development or reasonably attributable to oil and gas development in NPRA. I had a couple of slides that had to do with I don't want to spend too much time on it because it's sort of a subset of the bill. But the previous version of the bill had an effort to try to evaluate the grants. I would submit to this committee, as I have to others and publicly on the floor, that if one doesn't think the grant process is broken, please come to my office and review the grants, review the book, review the method by which they've been analyzed. And you, too, will agree that it's broken and need to be fixed. But in the sponsor statement, this is an issue set aside for another day. I had a couple of slides to bring into question how these were evaluated. We don't need to do that. But I will wrap up, and the next slide, just to understand for the moment how the current process works and how the proposed process works out of this bill. In the current process, let's just take a number. If you had, last year we had $32 million, let's just round it off. $30 million that came from NPRA. In the current process, you take that $30 million and then you take out the grants, which last year were $24 million, so you had $6 million left. You then took 25% of that $6 million and it went to the permanent fund, a little bit to the school trust fund. The rest was available for PCE, et cetera, in this pecking order. So the 25% calculation came from the bottom number. What this legislation does is move that calculation to the top. So the process is that the money, we receive the money from the federal government. They tell us we get, same example, the $30 million. We then look at the $30 million and calculate 25% of $30 million. And we say that's our obligation to the permanent fund. We then go to the grants and we fund the grants. And if there's money left over, we satisfy that 25% obligation from the gross, and everything's fine. If there's not enough money left in that obligation, in what's left after the grants, it carries forward to the next year as an obligation back to the permanent fund. So in the second year, you would have the obligation of the 25% of gross, plus what's left from prior year or years. That's the process, and that's what this bill does. In summary, I would just, the last slide just says, now is the time to consider Senate Bill 171 and to recognize the obligation we have to Alaska's Constitution by ensuring that at least 25% of the bounty received from the development of MPRA is deposited into our permanent fund, as directed by Article 9, Section 15 of our Constitution. And with that, Mr. Chairman, that is my presentation, and I make myself available for your questions. And again, thank you for your deliberation in this busy time of year.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Wolf. Thank you for the slideshow. We don't get those very often. So. Any questions for Senator Wolf? Senator Schnell?
Gary, and I haven't had a good chance to study this, but is there a does the mechanism change as far as how they do their grants? I was trying to go through this little flow chart that you put together there. And basically, we would review and evaluate. Is that my interpretation, that they would bring their projects before the legislature? We'd review and evaluate them, yeah, and then tell them which projects we thought the list should
And through the chair, Representative Schnell, that part of the bill has been taken out in CRA, and that's I think you may have this. This was one of the compromises we tried to strike in our discussions the last 3 weeks with the North Slope Borough and CRA, and we just couldn't reach the middle. And so, rather than hold the bill up anymore, this was the process by which I tried to seek middle ground. And it's important, I think, to us to have the public involved. Public being us, I think it's important that there be available the information on how this allocation of this grant money is done. But we'll address that next year. Some would suggest that this is just another grant program. I would suggest there could be nothing further from the truth. There's no grant program in the state of Alaska that has the first cut. The first deposit comes before our permanent fund, and I strongly suggest, and we'll address it next year, that puts this in a different league, a different class, under a different level of scrutiny and accountability than any other grant program. But we'll work that next year. That's the subject for another day.
Okay, and just to let folks know, we do have Mike Black, the Director of Division of Community and Community Advocacy, and also Marla Berg is here with the North Slope Borough, and there may be some other people online too for questions. Representative Kelly?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The constitutional, you've obviously looked hard at that, and there's not a problem with the challenge vis-a-vis the Constitution and the federal law since you left the grants first. Then you went to the permanent fund. Then you took the remainder. Is that, and you're pretty sure that there's not that this would survive a challenge, Mr. Chairman?
I am through the chair, Representative Kelly. I am. We still hold, and just where my foot clicked off the presentation was the stack of law, federal, state, and state regulations. That still stays in place, and you have to do the grants. We may argue over what the grants are, but the fact of the matter is you still have to do them, and then comes the deposit for permanent fund. So that basic structure hasn't changed. We've only changed the amount of the obligation by under which we would be obligated to fund the permanent fund.
Sure, go ahead.
The amount of the grant surprises me, and the amount that has gone per capita is just something I wasn't familiar with. You've looked at this enough. Is there a definition of impact? I mean, somewhere in here, critical impact is used. Does this all assume negative impacts? And what are some of the positive impacts that the oil might have on the slope?
and through the chair, Representative Kelly, we struggled and struggled and struggled with definitions of impact. And if you ask six people, you get six different definitions. There's more to this than just the negative part. You have to step back, and Shirley Nowitzki has impacted being 8 miles away from Alpine, and we think of the negative parts. We should also think of having what amounts to free gas in their homes starting this summer. They'll be responsible only for the maintenance operation of the gas line. There's a bed tax in Nowitzki now, a positive bed tax that allows them to develop their small economy. There are people that work in Nowitzki that go to a job every day now, and that's economic development. I don't think you don't have in your packet. I don't know if I do. We forget also that the North Slope Borough gets a tremendous amount of impact money, and not in the sense of NPRA, but just by having an oil field 200 or 300 miles away. Last year, in 2005. The state of Alaska, you know, we have a 20 mil ad valorem tax, so they agreed years ago that rather than each municipality tax the oil companies however they wish, the oil companies just said, we'll just pay 20 mils on all of our investment in Alaska, and you folks fight about how to divvy it up. Last year, that brought in $260 million into the general fund, but the communities also can grab that depending on how they tax themselves in organized Alaska. And in Fairbanks, in fact, we get about $4 million out of that because, of course, the pipeline runs through there in Alyeska. It's interesting, and I think it's important to note, that the North Slope Borough last year received $189 million from that. Valdez, $13 million, Kenai, $7 million, Anchorage, just a touch. That left about $40 million, $45 million for the state of Alaska. So if you line up, I think it's, and I said publicly one time, I think you could qualify that as impact over the last 6 years in this decade. The North Slope Borough has received $1.2 billion in ad valorem taxes that intercepts that flow into the general fund. Also, there's a PILT payment that they have of some $4 million that goes to them. There's assorted other things that are a direct result of oil and gas development. And I would submit that I think one day I divided 190 million by 5,500 people and came up with 32,500 per head. We are, in this last days of the session, we're arguing over whether we should have municipal assistance in the amount of $100 per head. And we have an area of the state that is getting $32,500 right out of the general fund. I certainly don't begrudge them that. I would just like people to acknowledge the fact that that also is payment for impact. Impact that's perhaps done by something as far as 300 miles away from where they live. I think we need to be honest with one another and talk about that openly. So anyway, those are some of the positive impacts. We shouldn't just think of this all as doom and gloom. There's a lot of great things going on, and this is just an attempt to try to share that with people of Alaska and not just with one area of the state.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Sure. Representative Holt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Wilkin. I understand while it was in community and regional affairs that there was a compromise trying to set up a compromise, discuss the issues. How does that work in community affairs
Rep Thomas and Rep Olson had some concerns. I mean, as you know, Senator Stevens, Ted Stevens rang in on this bill and wanted us to be careful and so that slowed things down a bit, but we worked towards, as I said earlier, we tried to work towards the middle and tried to make proposals back and forth. We got wrapped around the axle on two things. One, the definition of impact. It's subjective, and the other is the process by which, as you see on your spreadsheet there. As I said earlier, I'm at risk of repeating myself, I think it's important that this process be done in public and that it be accountable, because each of us are accountable for how we allocate these monies, because every dollar we approve going to a certain area of the state is a dollar that isn't available for places in the state that need it for energy or schools or troopers or whatever. But Representative Holm, we just couldn't get there with the time allotted, and so we'll come back, and everything's fine. It's just a matter of working through it, and I'll have a couple more years at least to work on it. So thank you.
Anything else, Representative Holm?
That's fine.
Okay. Senator Wilken, some of this impact money that the North Slope borough is receiving, if they weren't receiving this impact money, would then they be coming here to the to the legislature asking for some money out of the general fund? I'm not sure what all this impact money is going to, what projects, but
sure.
My concern is that if they weren't getting that money, then that'd be that much more strain on our general fund.
That's been
offered up as a reason why we should just let this money slide through. It's not like the North Slope Borough and these communities are not included in our capital budgets. In all of the legislation that we do, we don't peel out the North Slope Borough and say, oh, you get that, therefore you don't get this. I mean, they're part of the process. It is true that they haven't, that their general fund requests for capital over the time have been in the lower quarter. But I would go back to what I said earlier, that just this last year, $189 million in general fund money that automatically goes to them through 4356 ad valorem tax. So they use that for all sorts of things, half of it being debt. So, I think that it's fair to say that if they didn't have that, they would be coming to but then again, every community comes to the legislature and asks for capital appropriations and for operating appropriations. They should be no different.
Okay,
it just dawned on me. Was there in your Senator Morgan, in your discussions during the community and regional affairs, did you ever offer any other kind of alternative methodology in order to get to this? Is this the only way you know to solve the problem?
Through Chair Representative Holm, methodology in regard to analysis of the grants?
Yeah.
We've been working this bill now for, this is the end of the second year, so we've made offers to whomever would like to listen to us, to come to us, both the department and those parties affected, but to come to us with whatever plans they may have. That effort has not produced any results. I've been coming to the middle, and I haven't had too many people join me there. But I'm wide open for ideas, and we've been that way. We spoke with representatives from the North Slope Borough, and we'd be more than happy to sit in a room and try to hammer it out. But everybody's got to give a little.
Kelly.
Getting a siphon hose in before the permanent fund seems like it'd be a great idea for Fairbanks, too. I mean, how come some Zobel-type lawyer that's hasn't sued on this and said, you know, here's what the Alaska Constitution says? Why hasn't there been a bigger wrestle on this at that level?
I can only surmise, but I think it goes back to the slide that shows the inactivity since this was put in place. You know, it was 25 years ago this was put in place. And now the money, starting in 2000, now the money is starting to flow, and it's something that I think we need to address now rather than later. Obviously we're going to have, if we really wanted to do this right and not do what amounts to a workaround, we need to change federal law. And that's something obviously I'd be supportive of. It takes more than me to do that. So we could certainly change federal law. That's been suggested, but we've got other battles to fight.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Very good. Any other questions for Senator Wilken? I know this has been a long process for Senator Wilken, and it appears like you've reached at least a temporary compromise with the C community regional affairs. That's where this bill's been most of its life. Other questions? We do have some folks online, I believe, to testify. Maybe we should go there at this point in time. I'm not sure. I've got two lists here. I've got a Mike Black, Melanie Greer. Are they either here or online? Okay. Mr. Black, did you want to testify, sir?
No, sir, Mr. Chairman. I'm here to answer questions, if any would.
Mr. Black? Let's see. But Marla? Bert, did you want to testify or questions? Questions for the North Slope Borough? Okay. And is Dennis Roper, is he online, or are you here representing him?
He should be just landing.
Okay. All right. Okay. Then if there's no one else to testify, no one online there, no one here in Juneau, okay, we'll go ahead and close public testimony. There were some physical notes, I believe, involved, but were they all zero?
No, there's.
We have the Ledge Council, Alaska Permanent Fund, and DCCED. All zero fiscal notes. Okay. Any other discussion?
Mr.
Yes, go ahead, Richard Joe.
I just didn't want to. I'm going to spend too much time on this because it has taken a long journey to get to this point. But I don't want folks to go away with the impression of how impacts may or may not occur, and we can probably debate this till the cows come home. But the impacts of development slope for the people that live there are huge. And they may not always come in ways that we can easily monitor, can easily see. And you know, when you're part of a hunting society, and in 30 years, the changes that have occurred up there have been huge, and it really does get to a lot of the. The sense of, people's feeling like things are always encroaching. Development is always encroaching, and the whole area of the North Slope, on the land and on the ocean, is the market basket for the people that live there. And there's always that worry because there's a very, very strong tie to the land and to the renewable resources. And so, you know, in many, many other societies, impacts, that you see can be easily monitored. But yet, what people are going through oftentimes are the things that can't be, the spiritual, the emotional, as well as the physical and the mental. So this piece of legislation has come a long ways, and granted the North Slope does have the ability, the borough, to do the tax as they should. That was the intent of the borough formation on the first part. And that's why we continue to advocate at least some in areas that haven't formally formed their boroughs. But, you know, I don't look forward to going through to the legislation that may be forthcoming in the out years. But this is an area, at least in this journey for this piece of legislation, that people have been able to find some ground. And and we'll see what happens in the out years.
I forgot. You represent Kotzebue and then all of the North Slope all the way over to Barrow, is that correct?
No, that is not correct.
Okay.
I go right to the Canadian border.
Oh, okay. Very good. That's not, you just keep going.
You've got Anwar. You're
part of Canada,
too? I have
Anwar.
I have Anwar.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, and...
So you have the entire North Slope.
I have the entire North Slope. Yeah. And you know, over the years, the people of the North Slope have been a very visible, a very vocal partner in the development of our oil and gas resources. And there is some... And I'm not sure of the right word, but you know, we do feel some trepidation when we perceive that a tax's coming, if we continue to be supportive of those kinds of efforts. And
no, I appreciate that, Representative Jewell, and I know that the it's important to keep good relations with the North Slope and the North Slope Borough, as well as with the oil companies, and because obviously that impacts 90% of our revenue here. Now, my experience on the North Slope has been that a lot of things that, and this was the question I had for Senator Wilkins, a lot of things that may fall on the state to provide, the North Slope Borough provides themselves. For example, search and rescue. I can only imagine how many state troopers we'd have to have up there if we were to take over that function entirely. And I know the North Slope Borough does most of that themselves. There probably is some troopers that are up there. I'm not sure. But maybe you can give us some examples of...
Well, the mayor in his presentation before the Community and Regional Affairs talked of an example where just a short time prior to the hearing, where on one of the rigs there was an accident, and the North Slope Borough Search and Rescue had to be they're the first responder. And that was a direct result of use of the NPRA funds. And he was able to cite that as an example, but you're correct. There's probably a lot of good things that have come as a result of using those funds. But generally speaking, you won't hear too much of those. If there's a problem area, that's what we'll hear about. And to some of the concerns in earlier concerns by Senator Wilkins on how those are done at the department level, I think stepped up the review process and made some impacts at that level that have benefited the program and made it better and stronger. We have a new administration in the North Slope Borough who's got elected and jumped right into the middle of this whole thing, and this is very high on his radar. And I think that our new mayor and his administration are going to pay very close attention to the types of grants requested that come forward and how they get executed. And so I have, you know, in even though there's been some concern about some of the actions taken along the way, I think for some of those they have fulfilled some of the concerns of the senator, as well as the department. That's made their life a little bit easier. But there are good things that happen up there.
Yeah, and obviously this is going to have more attention, and there is going to be more light shined on this issue, as I know there's some exploratory activity going on in NPRA, and hopefully they'll find something. Hopefully it'll be large enough that will be producible, and hopefully we'll do PPT right, and that there will even be more activity going on in NPRA. So obviously this issue is going to get more and more attention as we progress forward. So,
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Representative Mark.
As I understand the intent of this bill and what the substance of it does is move up the priority chain just to the sponsor of the bill. The 25% goes into the permanent fund, and then everything else would more or less stay the same. Isn't that correct?
Good Chair, Representative Weirach, that's correct. It's all it is a simple calculation. The obligation of the permanent fund under current law is 25% of net after grants. This legislation makes the obligation 25% of gross before grants. It doesn't change one whit the vetting of the grants and the awarding of the grants and all that Judge Carpenetti said we should be doing. It only changes the number that the 25% is calculated from.
Mm-hmm.
Grants very important to remember. The grants still take number one priority under federal law.
Impacts have to. That's still, to Representative Kelly's question, why isn't some Zobel type sued? It's a matter of federal law trumping state law. So that's probably why. I mean, they're still available for litigation, whether this scheme violates that federal law. So that's still an open issue, I think. It's my understanding that you're trying to craft something that both complies with what we are supposed to do as a people under our Constitution and what the federal government has dictated we have to do with NPRA money.
This is very much, it's another subsistence issue. You get right down to it. Fed's told us to do something, we don't want to do it. So this is a workaround, I think but it fulfills our obligation for what we raised our hand and said what we would do.
Go ahead.
But to that point, though, I think there is a distinction between perhaps what your testimony is and what Representative Jules is that we do want to address those NPRA impacts through grants to those communities that are closest to the source of the NPRA resource. So I think it's warm spit what we're doing here. And, I mean, warm, you know, in the analogy, kissing your aunt or something, it may not be. Never. I tried to get it to Kellyism, and I couldn't.
Yeah. don't even try to compete.
Too much Kaiya.
All due respect, warm spit. That's a new one.
Okay, very good. Just no other questions for the sponsor of the bill. So, we do have folks, as I said, with the North Sulphur all here. Okay, Representative Stoltz.
Chairman, I move that CS for House Bill number 381 Finance be moved out of committee with the attached fiscal notes with reported with individual recommendations to committee members.
Okay, any objections? Seeing none, committee, or bill passed this committee. Sure. Thank you, Senator Wilkin.
Thank you, Representative Meyer. Thank you, committee members, for all your time.
Okay. Bill 315, help, I put on my glasses. Unredeemed, disposition of an unredeemed property. Nett, do you want to come on up?
I'm sorry.
We might get one in there.
Yeah, I'm going to go left. I moved out this year. Finance. It wasn't.
Oh, okay.
So if you just take a, make a note.
All right. Okay. We need to. We got a little housekeeping
work to do here. Representative Chairman, I incorrectly amend the motion to the CRNRA Community Regional Affairs version. My apologies.
Instead of the, what'd you say?
Finance.
Finance?
Okay.
CRNRA version of the previous bill. Any objections to that change on the motion? Seeing none, then that will be done. Okay, so we have before us Annette Ski. How do you pronounce that? Skibinski, okay?
Yes, good morning. Annette Skibinski, Staff Center of Calgary. The bill before you, Senate Bill 315, has to do with property that is unredeemed, property that is left at a pawn shop past the unredeemed property deadline, which is 60 days. This bill does not change the loan limits that pawn shops can loan a individual. What it does is restores the ratio between pawn limits and unredeemed property. This language for unredeemed property is $400 currently. The bill changed it to twice the pawn loan limit, which current day would be $1,000. This standard was originally set in 1981, being twice the loan limit for unredeemed property. And the loan limit has gone up over the years, but the unredeemed property limit has not. And I can give you an example, because this is the only way I can actually really explain it, even to myself, is if, for example, I take my wedding ring, I take this into a pawn shop, let's just say that this ring has a value, a street value at Fred Meyer Jewelers or Zales for $2,000. When I take this ring into the pawn shop, the most that they can give me for this ring is $500. So I leave my ring, I take the $500. I have 60 days to either make interest payments on my loan or go back with the $500 and claim my ring. If that does not occur after 60 days, the pawn shop has the right to sell my ring. They can sell it for however much they think they can get. Right now, they gave me $500 for this ring, but currently the law states that once they sell this ring for $400, they have to start splitting the profits with me at 50%. So today, in order for them to get back their $500, they have to sell this ring for at least $600 just to break interest with the money they gave me. So that's why the unredeemed property ratio is being raised. So if this bill is to pass, the unredeemed property limit would go up to twice the loan limit being $500, making unredeemed property $1,000, where they don't start splitting the profits with me until this ring sells for more than $1,000. And just simply restores the ratio that was originally set.
Okay. Does that conclude your testimony?
It does. If there's questions, I can.
Okay. All right. And we do have, let's see, looks like we have Terry Lutz, Financial Institution Examiner, Division of Insurance, and Clyde Sniffen, Assistant Attorney General, as well as, I think I have some of the, Deborah Fink, I don't know if is she online? No, okay. Okay. So those folks are online to testify or for questions. Is there any questions for the sponsor, Representative Weimer?
Oh, not for the sponsor.
Okay. All right, thanks, Annette. Okay, let's see if, Mr. Lutz, did you want to testify, sir?
No, Mr. Chairman, I'm just here.
Oh, there you are. I thought you were up there, online. So. Yeah, whatever. Wherever Representative Hawker always looks. By the way, for the record, we have Representative Hawker, Representative Jewell is joining us, as well as Representative Cthulhu. They've been here for quite some time. Okay, and Mr. Sniffen, did you want to testify, sir?
Through the chair, no, I don't, but I'd be happy to answer any questions if the committee has any. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Warwick, who is your question for?
Sniffen. Mr. Sniffen.
Mr. Sniffen. Okay, go ahead, Representative Warwick.
This is one of those, sounds like one of those, well, it's been a long time since we've addressed this, and so let's just update it kind of bills, and I don't have much experience with pawn shops, and so I'm not sure there's like a consumer protection niche. I suppose there is with pawn shops, but I just wondered what your view of this legislation is and the impact to the public.
Through the chair, thank you, Representative Whitrock. That's a good question, and the consumer protection niche that we addressed in this bill was to add the language at the very end of subsection B that requires a pawnbroker to at least provide the consumer with notice that if they don't redeem their property, as Annette explained, that their property is subject to sale and that the pawn shop owner can, in fact, keep the first $1,000 plus 50% over $1,000 that they are able to sell the property for. These types of transactions usually involve consumers who have no other place to go. They can't go to their bank. They don't have credit on their credit cards anymore. They really are in a position of dire need, and they end up taking out these loans without thinking about those things. So at our request, that language was added to at least provide notice to the consumer. So we think that at least puts everybody on notice of what's going to happen if you don't fulfill your obligations.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Barr. Any other questions?
I guess I did have a question for Mr. Lutz.
Mr. Lutz? Okay. Mr. Lutz?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You're with Banking Securities and Corporations. Do you regulate pawn shops?
For the record, I'm Terry Lutz. I'm with the Division of Banking Securities, and through the chair, Mr. Weirach, we do not regulate pawn shops, pawn brokers, and small loan shops. They're specifically exempt from the Small Loans Act.
But you're sort of the agency tasked with following the bill?
Yes, because of the exemption that is listed in the Small Loans Act.
Question is to whom?
Pawnbrokers and small loan shops, I think, is the verbiage that's used in the Small Loans Act.
Not the agency that oversees this activity?
That is correct.
Which agency does?
I believe that's left up to the municipality, police.
Oh, I see. So you're here, why?
Just because the Small Loans Act is mentioned in there.
Oh, I see.
And in case there's any questions, I guess I'm
going to ask. I see. And then, Mr. Chairman, what is the interest rate that can be charged legally under the Small Loans Act for this kind of activity?
For that kind of activity? For loans up to $850, I believe it's 36% a year. 36%. If it was made by one of our licensees under the Small Loans Act. Because they're completely exempted from the Small Loans Act, so there is no limitation, to my knowledge, on what a pawnbroker can charge.
Anything else, Mr. Lara? Okay. Any other questions? Yep. Any other questions, Mr. Lutz, before he leaves?
Sorry.
I think you're fine. Go ahead, sir.
Thank you.
Okay. No fiscal note. All right. Here. Let's take prepays.
What is 1-0?
1-0 fiscal. there's no other questions on the bill, Mr. Chairman?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would make the motion that we move CS for House Bill number 381, Finance.
Senate Bill 315.
Oh, excuse me. I closed up the wrong bill.
No wonder you didn't have any
questions. I've done passed that one out already. Let's try again, Mr. Chairman. How about we move Senate Bill...
It's hard to get good help.
315 out of committee with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal note.
Okay. Any objections? None. Senate Bill 315... passes out of the committee. Is it
Labor and Commerce?
Labor and Commerce version, okay. Representative Wire?
I recommend that not on her ring. She'd never get
Jimmy's
at that rate.
Is it?
Mm-hmm. 36%.
After birth. All of them was conceived on the banks of Virginia.
Representative Foster here. We're not used to moving up the bill. Okay, there's just a couple things we need to go over. Everybody should have received the confirmation packets for the Mental Health Trust and Assessment Review Board. If there's any names there, we want to forward these names on. So if there's any names that you have an objection to, if you could let us know, we'll bring those names up tomorrow.
You're going to bring them up for consideration tomorrow?
Only those that members have objections to.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
We're looking at Lorraine Durr, Paula Pence Easley, and Roy Hundorf. Is that correct?
I don't have the list, but that sounds correct.
That's correct.
Okay.
And Mary Keller.
Okay. Yes, those are the names. Many of those in particular that you have objection to being appointed to the Mental Health Board, let us know, and we'll have that person online so that we can ask him or her questions. Okay, so the next meeting is scheduled at 1:30, but we're going to make this at the call of the chair. We have a pretty active floor session today, and we're not sure when we'll be able to start finance. But we hope to have a meeting this afternoon, so it'll be at the co-chairman Chenault's call. So if there's nothing else to come before the committee, we are adjourned.
Are we doing
Kevin, here.